This is the Chasing Tomorrow podcast with Joe Gagnon. We bring you captivating conversations that will inspire all of us to go after our own version of a high-performance life. Welcome to the Chasing Tomorrow podcast. Today I have a very special guest with me, Peter Delane Hare. Peter is a colleague of mine. He's the Chief Technology Officer at 1UP Health. He's a father of four girls. As you'll get to know from his accent, he's not a Native American, but he's been living here for a while. He's from Belgium. So he and I are talking cycling quite frequently because Belgium is one of the cycling capitals of the world. And over the time that we've worked together, we've started to dig deeper and deeper into this idea of how data and health integrate together. Peter will tell you a little bit about his background and how he sort of found his way here. But I think there's this emerging theme that the truth is we don't know enough about ourselves. Data is hard to get to, and health is our number one priority. But we wouldn't run any of our other parts of our business, our finance, or anything else without data telling us what to do. And so we're going to dig into that deeply here, and I think you'll enjoy the conversation. Peter, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Joe. Thanks for inviting me. This is exciting to be part of your podcast.
Yeah. So why don't we start a little bit with, since I gave a brief background, tell people about yourself, what your journey was to this moment, and then we'll get into some questions.
Yeah, definitely. Well, sounds weird to myself, but I've been in my career for, I think, more than 20 years now. And if I look back, what the red thread is through my career is that I always tried to, even though I'm a tech nerd and to talk about complicated words, data governance and metadata management, I think the red thread through my career was always like, how do we take data out of its sleepy mode and turn it into a true business asset, as you will, right? And I think there is so much data around there. I think a lot of industries are still just at the beginning of learning how to really kind of harness data and start to see insights into that. And for me, it was always kind of a dream, of course, to also finally get into what I call the last frontier, which is healthcare. I think healthcare, there is no other industry that produces more data in the world than healthcare. In fact, there are several zettabytes, that's trillions and trillions of bytes, untapped health data around there, right? And it's growing at a compound rate of 36% per year, right? So it's kind of growing faster than supply chain and media and entertainment data. So it's really a very transformative moment, I think, for healthcare to start looking into that with some eyes that have seen it in other industries evolve.
Yeah. So you are this self-proclaimed data nerd, but you're still a young guy thinking about your journey ahead and trying to, you and I've talked about whether being a plant-based person is helpful to one's health and exercising regularly. Maybe later we'll talk a little bit about how does someone balance all of that with raising kids, because everyone listening says, like, well, it's hard to fit in lifestyle to my lifestyle. But before we dive into that, there's a concept of longevity, which is how long we live, and then there's health span, how well we live. You know, you talk about a lot of data. We would all probably agree that there's probably a lot of data in the health industry. But then there's this linkage to us too, and how that data might apply to our lives. So tell me a little bit about your idea of cracking the code to longevity and health span through data.
Yeah. Well, Joe, I'm a lifelong student, so I just want to make sure the audience here understands that I'm not a medical doctor, right? And I don't possess clairvoyant powers because I can see through the crystal ball of data intelligence. But I think I'm just a nerd who's trying to apply his domain expertise to this field, right? And I do think starting the conversation on how data and artificial intelligence and other technologies could really help us identify the correlations between risk factors in life and how they contribute to the development of diseases, right? And how it impacts our longevity. Now, of course, it starts always about what does longevity means, right? So I consider myself a very lucky man, not only because I get to work with great people or I have a great family, but also because I'm healthy, right? And I don't need to worry about too many things. And that gives me a lot of time to think about prevention, right? Or how can I keep that earned advantage up, right? And how can I inform myself better, right? Because I enjoy life. I have no disease. I have no real pains. And I prefer to call prevention more proactivity, right? Because it's more about doing something good to happen rather than acting after something bad has happened, right? And I think proactivity really emphasizes on the fact that most of the decisions lie with ourselves, right? So we as people can make a lot of decisions ourselves. So we should be proactively thinking about making longevity decisions. And of course, as long as we have the evidence around us, and that brings us naturally to data, right? If we can connect now data to evidence, we can really kind of inform ourselves better for the decisions we make ourselves, I think. But of course, there are a lot of decisions also made on behalf of us, right? So the access to healthcare we have is largely decided by others, right? It's decided by our employers, right? It's decided by the governments. So how can these large institutes who are working in very complex networks of dependencies with others also help? How can they help themselves evolve healthcare plans, for example, and make better decisions for us so we can have that complete understanding, I think. And that's what I mean about how can we crack that code, right? It's decisions that lie with ourselves, but also decisions that lie with the healthcare infrastructure that makes decisions on behalf of us.
Yeah, so as you think of, are we at a time in our lives and in how tech is integrating with our lives that's different now with data than 25 or 50 years ago in our health? What's your sense of the progression of accessible data that we could then apply to make some of these better decisions? Have we moved far down the field here?
Well, I definitely think so, right? I mean, if you look, why do we have this explosion of health data? It's because we are all wearing wearables on our wrists, some on their index fingers. We are using apps, Strava, to record our exercise activity. Some people record their nutrition, right? But the problem is all that data is basically scattered around, right? It sits in applications, it sits in several devices in different clouds. And then, of course, there's the claims data and the clinical data, right, that is owned by the insurance companies and by the hospitals and the healthcare providers. So I really do think, of course, in the last 20 years, I think with the ITECH Act and the Cures Act, the government also helped these large institutes to digital our data. But I still believe that, yeah, we're not at a place yet where we can really look at, hey, great, we have this large data catalog here, and now we can build an ecosystem of scientists and practitioners and data engineers to really kind of try to discover new insights from this, as we discussed before. So we're not there yet.
Yeah, no, not yet. Sort of, I'm sure that when you were growing up in Belgium, you found the same effect that I did growing up in the United States was in our early world around saving money. We might put money into the bank, but to find out how much money we had, we needed to go to the bank. You needed to go to a teller and they would print something in this bank book we had. And then you would go back 3 months later if you wanted to know. That was the only access to information you had about your finances, was other than the old saying, you kept it under your mattress. And now it's rare that we would access our financial information on paper. It's rare that we even use paper as currency. We've gone completely digital in our financial lifetimes. This isn't past our lifetime. We as kids, and now here we are. And so it feels the similar kind of trajectory in health, that a lot of the data was kept at a doctor's office, it was locked away on a paper record. If you were lucky, you might get a fax. And now here we are. You're right. We have devices that can track what we could do. There's therapeutic, there's data, more and more data being created. But we have to put that data to work, right? That's the key, is how do we think about that? And I know you've been thinking about health decisions and data informing, and think about, so like, how could you think about proactive health decisions that are benefiting from data, making you make a better decision so you don't have to just go to a doctor and ask them to tell you what to do? You could do this yourself. What have you been thinking about?
Yeah, well, first of all, I like to reset, right? We need to, the whole idea is to collect more evidence, right? So we can inform ourselves better. And of course, we should have a conversation also about how less privileged people are able to inform themselves, because it's easy for me to say I enjoyed a 10-year academic education ending with a PhD. So I learned pretty much how to process large amounts of information, and I can also have a conversation about that. But not everybody has the time or the privilege to do that, right? So I think that is one kind of important topic that we definitely should get back to. But for me, surrounding myself with people also, you, Joe, you inspired me somehow in many ways on making these decisions, right? Because I see other people do it. But if you're surrounded with people who are making bad decisions, yeah, you're not going to make a lot of progress, right? I think the straightforward decisions are, yes, you stop smoking, you minimize your alcohol consumption, and you make sure you move, right? That you at least run a couple of miles a week or have some big walks there. Yep. So I think from what I read, longevity experts, they always talk about those four buckets, right? Nutrition, exercise, sleep, right? And then one is a bit harder to grasp, I think, is emotional health, right?
Yep.
And the first ones are really easier to measure, right?
Right.
And yeah, if you can kind of maximize all those elements, I think you're heading in the right direction, right? So
as a data person, when you spent a lot of time in financial services looking at data before you jumped into the health space, they always talk about risk and trying to identify risk, whether you're making an investment or understanding what could happen. And we don't really talk a lot about risk with health. We might say it's risky to drive fast. That could be dangerous, and I might get into an accident and have to go to the emergency department. But generally, trying to understand better these risk factors that affect longevity, and you sort of touched on a couple of them. And of course, neither of us are here to tell anyone how to live, but it's just there is more data that tells you about these risk factors. And are you willing to accept those risk factors? Your points are right on. If you're not sleeping enough, that's a risk factor, right? Because our body needs to heal itself. If nutrition is off, it's a risk factor. If you are of alcohol, smoking, all these things, they may be pleasures of life, but they also have risk factors to them. And so as you think about the data becoming more available so we can make better decisions, where do you think we are in that spectrum? Have we made good progress? Is it more available? Is it more certain so we can make good decisions?
Yeah. Well, Joe, you also spend quite some time with longevity experts, and I'm also reading up a lot on that. And I hope through this podcast, we could also maybe stir a larger conversation, us connecting with the medical doctors, the real doctors in the room.
Yep.
But from what I learn, what I read is that, yeah, there is personal risk, and there's risk to ourselves, right? And then there's the systemic risk of the healthcare infrastructure. It's two different things. And we could talk a little bit later about that, of course, but financial systems understand very well risk now to understand the systemic risk as a whole of the entire industry, right? When we're talking about personal risk, I think that we should maybe focus on the classes of chronic diseases that really contribute the lion's share of the cost of healthcare, right? So, and I think thanks to data and technologies, thanks to science, we start to understand that these are actually four major classes of diseases, right? I think so: cancer, cardiovascular diseases, metabolic disorders such as diabetes type 2, and then you have the neurodegenerative diseases. And then some experts would even claim that one of those classes really starts all the other ones, right? So they're starting to see more than correlations. We're starting to see causations, right, in the data. And machine learning is also a very important difference, right? Correlation and causation. We don't understand causation very well yet, even in machine learning and artificial intelligence. It's very hard for an algorithm to explain causes, right? Even for humans. But I think what's important is that a lot of those chronic diseases, they actually develop over decades without us knowing it. That could be, I hope not, that I'm already developing something that I will only discover in 20 years, and our current healthcare infrastructure is simply not equipped to discover that before the onset. It usually discovers it at a moment where they can give you therapy, where it's actually already limiting your further quality of life. Right. So I think using more data to not only find correlations, but also causations between risk and the development of diseases, we already start to see that some of those risk factors share certain drivers or features that can be eliminated by changing certain behaviors, your food, your sleep, your lifestyle, how often you go to a doctor. So, and all, I think all these things really contribute to making the right decisions, right, based on evidence, to actually kind of undermine the drivers that drive those risks leading to the diseases. You see, I'm now starting to see kind of a mental map of dots in a space that are interacted with each other, which is basically kind of a knowledge graph of some sort or a neural network that now can start to influence in cells, right? So we can start right. seeing the dependencies between all those points in the graph.
Yeah, it's interesting. You sort of touched on this a little, and I think maybe we should dig in just a little. You know, everyone's been hearing about artificial intelligence and the momentum building in the industry around this idea that one day we'll have these computers that'll think for us. I certainly believe that we're far away from that. A lot of data required to make artificial intelligence work. In some way, it's not been all that different technologically over the past 30 years. There's more data and there's more computing capability that's brought artificial intelligence more into the forefront of how we think. But in this world of, you know, the doctor, and you've mentioned that a couple of times, the doctor is really still the primary method for interpreting the history, the circumstance, this data to understand our health. How do you feel about where AI goes relative to health as a sort of a co-pilot for the doctor, as a alternative? Is there going to be enough data? But because you said we made no correlation, but not causation. And could you empower a machine if it doesn't really fully understand that? Would we want that either? I don't know. How have you been thinking about it? I know none of us are trying to predict, but just understand where we are in this life cycle.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And honestly, I also must say I'm only treading the water here or starting to tread the water. And I still have so much to learn, right, Joe? You and I have looked a lot at the administrative data, right, and the clinical right. data. There already you can see significant opportunities of applying machine learning or artificial intelligence. For example, just looking at claims data, you could already start finding fraud patterns, right? And if you can remove fraud patterns and claims data, you could then actually repurpose that money for actually reimbursing people who actually are honest and need it, right? So this is kind of the low-hanging fruits, but even there we're only starting with the beginnings, right? So if we can start applying AI and machine learning on these small use cases, delivering significant return on investment on those small use cases, then data leaders in different organizations are also going to start to kind of in that future, right? And then more money and more funding will go into the right areas of investments where we can then implement those technologies, right? The problem with the AI hype today is like, well, we're actually throwing billions of dollars at a large problem, but we're not really solving a problem, right? So we have to kind of look at different categories on where then that balance would be between augmenting a human, right, with human judgment, right, versus totally replacing the human judgment with machine calculation, right? And it's kind of the spectrum, right? You actually have an X as and a Y as a judgment versus calculation, right?
Right.
And it's not something I invented, right? That was Weinbaum, who actually built the first chatbot at MIT in the 60s, who spoke about the balance between these two. But I think, for example, robotic surgery, right? There is a high probability that actually replacing a human by a machine to actually perform microsurgery would be a better option, right? Where the human would become the co-pilot of the machine, right? Versus probably in most decisions, it's more that the machine or the AI would be a co-pilot of the human doctor. They're like, hey, your patient, for example, doctor looks at test results of a patient, and then the doctor would use the normal distribution or the normal test results to compare to. But then an AI might say like, well, your patient, you should not look at the average person, but maybe you should put that person in the context of cohorts of similar people with similar risks, similar behaviors, right, and similar vulnerabilities, and then make better decisions on what I call small data, local data, rather than than big data, you see. Yeah. So I think there's a massive amount of opportunity. And I think what we're now seeing with population health and social determinants of health and more personalized medicine is all going in the right direction, I think, of doing that.
Hey guys, Joe Gagnon, host of the Chasing Tomorrow podcast, and this episode is brought to you by 1UP Health. 1UP Health is a modern cloud data and interoperability platform that makes it easy to acquire, store, and share data between payers, providers, and patients. I hope you enjoy the episode.
Yeah, it's interesting, Peter, that you know this language called as a data scientist. This is a career or a role that is sort of evolved over the past 5+ years, where smart people are looking at data and asking lots of questions and doing the what ifs and the path to some insight through consistent just digging into the data. And so now there are some practitioners, doctors and others, who are becoming data people themselves. Maybe the skill of a data scientist, more data available for the doctor to consume and see patterns that they would understand better because of their experience. And so it sort of strikes me that some of the roles of the traditional medical practitioner are going to evolve, where they could spend more time with the data and treat their patients better as a result. Have you been thinking much about that at all in this data scientist, not just becoming a separate person, but integrating into much of our lives?
Yes. Well, we can brainstorm all about potential scenarios, but maybe let's start with the simple fact that most doctors today are on the verge of a burnout because of simple administrative overhead, right? We're not even talking about some imaginary AI co-pilot who would tell a doctor like, hey, you oversaw that problem with your patient or so, or hey, you should maybe ask that question about your patient. That would be awesome. But even removing the base administrative overhead away from doctors, right, by removing all the fax copies in this industry, digitalizing healthcare records in a way that is readable and reusable, let's start with that maybe, right? And removing the burden of a doctor to repeatedly enter the same information into a system and having to spend a lot of money on clerks to continuously copy the same healthcare information in their practice. And once that is all gone, you're already going to create a space where the doctor, you said, right, has more mental capacity to do science, because in the end, the medical doctor is a scientist in practice. Right?
Yep.
And then that will then probably accelerate the development of using AI with them, right? Because now AI is kind of developing on itself without being part of the process that a doctor is trying to kind of change. Right. And so that would actually have a kind of a double whammy effect, probably, if both the doctor and the investment in the technology come together. Right. And it's kind of the singularity effect. Right. It's 1+1=3 almost.
Yeah, it's interesting. You and I have talked about some of the big ideas 25 years ago, put a computer on everyone's desk or power people with a phone in their hand. But one of the areas we haven't been bold enough to say is that every person should have all their health data, their historical health data, and any related data on their phone, so they would have a sense of what's happening in their life, what's a path forward, a little bit more deeper understanding and personal accountability to the data, maybe even from a family point of view. We all, at some point, end up with some aging parents potentially in our lives and how to deal with that and not enough data there. So do you see a time horizon where we will have data about ourselves minimally on our phones and this will be normal and expected? Is that 5 years from now, 10 years from now? Is the infrastructure there to do that? Person want to do that? How do you think about it?
Yeah, it always makes me chuckle a little bit because I personally probably have more on my phone. I've currently more information about what I bought on Amazon in the last 10 years than my healthcare records. Right. And personally, I worked in 4 different countries and 3 different continents, right, with 2-4 languages involved. Right. So I'm sure my health information is in bits and pieces in Australia, in the Netherlands, in Belgium, and the French speaking part and the Dutch speaking part. So yeah, it's interesting, but it should be in my pocket. Right. I think it's, and secondly, but it's also kind of, yeah, it's not funny actually, right? But yesterday too, I was looking at my airline accounts, checking my flights, and I was like, I forgot to check a box in my profile with emergency contact, a checkbox in many systems, right? So if something happens. But should that box not be, instead of typing in my wife's name and phone number, should that not just be a link to my healthcare records, right? Right. So we're still repeating, duplicating a lot of effort in that way. So we're definitely not there, right? I also know probably that I'm sure I have some healthcare records stored on a local general practitioner's laptop running Windows, I don't know which old version, without the security patches that are required. So I think the whole kind of fear of the industry to move to the clouds, we saw that in financial industry too, right? But if you look at it, moving data into the clouds is much safer, right? Because once you move data into the clouds, you get a whole range of security and privacy and other type of compliance standards that come with it from the moment you put it in the clouds. It's not the case when it's in a desk of somebody's office.
Right. So
getting over that is very important. And already half of the world's data is in the clouds, right? Our personal data is in the clouds and it's going to only expand. So it's already there. So let's move all the algorithms and the AI and the usage of the data also into the clouds, right? Because the data is moving there. We have to follow the money, right? Follow the data. But in my opinion, of course, data should be, your entire healthcare record should be up to date in your pockets. Secondly, it needs to be with your people you trust, right? Your wife, your children, your family, your friends. And then thirdly, it should, of course, be with your care network all the time, right? And of course, we see the beginnings of that, right, Joe? We know some software app developers, Primary Records, for example, build an app that enables to actually read and collect and all the healthcare data that they have, and share that with this trusted network to make sure they can coordinate the care, for example, of their elderly friends or their friend who has dementia or other things like that. So they keep up to date with that. So it is possible, right? Because it exists. We just need to kind of bring it to a much larger scale, I think. And that's our job, right?
Yeah, that's right. We get to work on that. Yeah, I know you have 4 daughters under the age of 7, I believe, and their life will be different. Right? Their healthcare journey will be different. Maybe not for the next 5 years, but by the time they're graduated college and working, they should probably have all that data in their pocket. You would imagine they would be making hopefully more informed decisions with better data. I don't think, at least as far as I would like to think we could see, I don't think we want to live differently. We want to live better. We don't want to be sick. We want to make better decisions. And sometimes without data, we don't know the implications of those decisions. Yeah. Drive down the road, and if you don't have a speedometer and the policeman pulls you over, you have no way of knowing whether you were speeding or not. And you get a ticket. You're like, wow, that was a shame, because had I known, I didn't have to. I think in health, the integration of data into our lives, which is now possible, right? There's nothing technologically in the way. Is that right, Peter?
No, it has nothing to do with technology. We have all the technologies to move any volume of data. I mean, people who use TikTok or Twitter every day know that, right? How many trillions of interactions are happening there every day or week. It's also not about security, privacy, ethics. Ethics is an important topic, privacy, but we have technologies that can really harness data and make it available in a very secure way and really control the access points to that if we really want to. So I don't think it's a technology. I think it's mostly, I mean, if you look at the young generation, maybe we are part of that too. They're not going to just take that for granted anymore, right?
I mean,
even I get already frustrated that somebody who is 18 years today, they're not going to accept that status quo anymore. This is utter nonsense, actually, that every time you go to a doctor, you have to bring a pen and start filling in paperwork. I mean, I think there's going to be an enormous push from the consumer, a new generational consumer, that is just going to change the game and is going to really force healthcare providers, healthcare insurance companies to really dramatically change the customer experience and also enable the consumers to take their data with them. You have to be able to always have that data with you. It shouldn't be a 10-step program to get to access to your data. Remember with Facebook, this whole, they also went through that, right? And now with Facebook, you can just click on a button and you download a zip file with all your personal data and you can move on. Okay, you can't do much with that, but it's the principle of this portability and open source approach to kind of look, the data belongs to the patient and we have to move to a patient-centric model and therefore a patient-centric data model around which everybody else coalesces and not inversely. Right? We have to move from a universal worldview to a heliocentric view. And the sun is all of the universe, not
yeah. Earth. So that the other thing that's really fascinating, if you think about alerts, let's just pick an alert, right? You might get an alert that, I don't know, your heat went off, or you might get an alert that your mortgage is due a payment, or you might get an alert. There's so many ways, and all this is informed by data, both from systems of data, these Internet of Things data, device. Once the data is available, we now have the systems to make that data available to our lives. And so in health, there's a lot of the events that happen to us that are the same for pretty much everyone. Hopefully we all make it to 45 years old. And in the US, we've decided that at 45, we should start thinking about the risks of colon cancer. Well, who's managing that? Is it your doctor who's trying to pay attention to whether you're 45? Maybe you didn't even know when you turned 45. The insurance company, maybe they do. But the data knows. It knows your birth date and it knows what today is. And it says, oh, look at that. Peter turned 45. These are the actions that should be taken. And it's such a simple example. Well, maybe you need a colonoscopy. Maybe we should ship you a Cologuard to your house. Maybe like we could even send you a video of how to do everything along with it. It seems the data can help complement the delivery of care, back to giving doctors more time, giving the system more time. It seems that's a good next step for us to try and this data that could help guide our health. What do you think about where we are with that?
Yeah, that would be fantastic. It's that my phone just reminds me to do those important decisions we discussed at the beginning of the podcast, right? But it, of course, requires to be, the data can do it in theory, but the data needs to be alive and continuously updated, right? And that's where still the challenge is, right? So how can we make data trigger those reminders to us? Then the data also needs to feed itself with new learnings all the time. Right. And that is still challenging, right? Because it's maybe because we have so many different formats and standards and ways of writing down that data, right? Let alone me still having to adapt to miles and Fahrenheit as a European.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
But I take what there's now this new healthcare data standard, FHIR, which is not out of the blue, right? It's based on former learnings on how to interoperate with healthcare data. FHIR is bringing this now to the level of the clouds. So at least it's a major step forwards. FHIR is not perfect, right? It's also designed to be giving that initial interoperability, but at least we would have something to make data move easier and make more sense out of it in a much more standardized way. Of course, there's still some local interpretation here and there, but at least that gives us the beginnings of an information superhighway, or you call it, or similar to the cargo industry, right? I mean, I don't know when it was when they invented the standard cargo containers.
Right.
But before that, all the ports, they couldn't work with each other, right? Because everybody was building different sizes of boxes and things like that. And then they said, like, you know what? We're going to all just agree on one standard format for a container. And suddenly, the cost of cargo decimated forever, right?
Yeah.
So simple. We can learn so much from that, right? And now ports can really focus on other problems. What is the throughput coming tomorrow? Or what is the backlog I have to deal with without having to worry on what size of a container fits in what place of the port, right? So it's kind of very similar to that. So standardizing on a shared understanding of data, moving the data into the clouds, making it move, and then finding ways on to really kind of leverage that data science we spoke about, which is very scarce, right? I mean, I know you're a good data scientist, Joe, because you do a lot of research and what you eat, and we talk a lot about protein, you and I. But how can we take Joe's scarce knowledge and put that on a chip of some sort or an LLM,
right?
So that everybody can chat with Joe LLM about what the next best decision would be for them, right? So that could be a really interesting future. Back to the data being self-driven, that would lie in a language model of some sort, right?
That we'll probably have to dig in deeply in another episode. When I started this podcast, I was inspired by the way that I always ended talks that I gave, which is come chase tomorrow with me, because there's a world where we're informed by the past, we live today, and we get excited about the future. And the more excited we are about the future, the more the human system works better. We innovate, we discover, we become unsatisfied. We want it to be better. It is the innate nature of humans. And so as we've evolved sort of these conversations out of just the experiential part of human performance and incredible achievements, we're now thinking more about the prospective part of life, this idea of, wow, I actually, this learned experience that I've had changed a lot. Now, wow, I didn't, probably wasn't that intentional when I started it, but now I realize that it was a deep level of intention, the choices that you make and the way that you live. And back to the four pillars, I might make them into five by saying it's mindset and community. So it's the sleep, it's nutrition, it's exercise, it's mindset or the emotional health, but community, how we fit in. If we focus on that, those are all under our control and we have the power to optimize on them. But if we're all sort of setting out to live healthier, longer lives, then the data is going to play a central role in that. And I think we've dug into a little bit of that. And so, Peter, I always to end with our guests, like, how do you feel about the future? What's your chasing tomorrow? You know, where are you thinking you're going to take yourself and the work that you do?
Well, I think a lot of what we've discussed today, right, applying personally my professional knowledge, I think there's a lot of opportunities to still make data work for us, right? And there's also even more work to educate the very smart people who can make the data work, that they're also ethical and regulatory and privacy boundaries to whatever we do, right? But we also don't want to get into a world where we're going to lock up all the data and be afraid of more innovation, right? So data is here to stay. It's only going to get more of this. And I think I feel personally, professionally, but also personally to an extent, of course, responsible to continue to apply my domain expertise, insofar can be considered domain expertise, to make sure that everybody drives safely with data. So
that's great. Well, look forward to continuing to collaborate with you as we make this work and these ideas valuable to everyone, because the health equality really matters and we can get better. For as far as we've come, there's still a lot still to do. So thanks for your work, Peter. And I look forward to talking with you again soon.
Thanks, Joe, for inviting me. Have a nice day.